Okay, well, we come to this last session of this time together, and I certainly have enjoyed it. I think you have too. Brett and Freeman have been such able speakers. I stand in awe of their knowledge and experience. Like one person already said, he feels like a, well, I've not here, but I've heard it said, it feels like a wiener in a steakhouse. You know, just a little inadequate, you know. Laura, you haven't heard that one before, have you? I'm be honest, I enjoy humor, and I want to be careful how we use that, but Jesus used humor, too. If you look in Scripture, there's some instances there. Well, as we come here, my topic this morning has to do with the six C's of communication in marriage, and I want to be fairly brief. I want to give you time to speak after I'm done here. Mark will have some announcements to make. In communication, in communication itself, there are three main components. There are the words that I say, there is the way I say it, and then there's body language. And the words that we use are the least important of those three elements. You're here this morning, and you were able to see Brett's facial expressions, his hands, you know, the voice inflection. That all is a part of communicating something. And it's the same way for all of us. So when you just hear a voice on the telephone, you hear the voice, and you're only picking up the words and the inflection. You can't see how the person is. You can't observe the body language. And that's all part of this communication. Just a few verses to start here. And that is Hebrews 13:16 says, "But to do good and to communicate, forget not." Now, I'll admit I've taken that word communicate a little out of context. I'm using communicate as a verbal exchange or a verbal giving of a thought from a person. But at the actual Greek word has more to do with benevolence, sharing, as you did when the offering was taken here. But then also in Ephesians 4, verse 31, just as a, you know, a bedrock, a text to put this on, it says, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor," and then the next three words, "and evil speaking, be put away from you with all malice." So just kind of hold those ideas, those two thoughts in mind as we work through this. Let all evil speaking be put away. Don't forget to communicate. We have a little bit of a little saying in our family. One of our children's marriage, the two realized they weren't quite on the same page, and she looks at him and says, "We need to communicate." And well, we do. That is just part of life. So it's been said that most marriage counsel involves the restoration of communication. And that is so true. And it's, well, isn't it a stitch in time saves nine, Laurie? Is that right? You're a stitcher, aren't you? We have sayings like that to nip it at the bud is far better than to let the whole thing unravel. All right, so at a marriage seminar on communication, the presenter, now please, that wasn't me, somebody else, he said this: "It is essential that husbands and wives know the things that are important to each other. For instance, gentlemen, can you name your wife's favorite flower?" One attendee leaned over, touched his wife's arm gently, and whispered, "Now don't laugh." Did they communicate? I have to give my wife credit for giving me that saying. I said, "I can use that." And that's kind of funny, yes. But there are times when I say something, or Sue Ann and I are in conversation, and I'm not sure what she just said. I heard the words, but for instance, this is, you know, "We need to cut down that big tree." Okay. How many big trees do I have on my property? Can you be a little more specific? She knows exactly what she means, but I don't. Communication needs to be clear. I just want to quickly move on. That's one I was wanting to look last night for. All right, we'll just pass over that. It's in the book back there, by the way. What are the secrets for staying married for a lifetime to one person? And the observation is any couple that has been married for 25 years or more probably has some ideas as to what makes it work for them. At our wedding, March 7th, 1981, the preacher said this: to get married is fairly easy. To stay married is a bit harder, but staying happily married for a lifetime should rank among the fine arts. And I've never forgotten that. That same preacher said, Philip, he said, there is no back door. You're married, it's for life. Good counsel from a man older than I. Someone has said this: a happy man marries the woman he loves, but a happier man loves the woman he marries. And I love sayings. A happy marriage is a union of two good forgivers. And you, each one of you, us individually, are the only one who can give your husband a happy wife or husband. In other words, the decision resides here as to how I treat her. You can blame circumstances, you can blame your upbringing, it doesn't hold water. You make the decision. So at the outset here, the six C's of communication in marriage come from a little booklet that Melody Davis put together years ago that had these here. You would come up, these aren't set in stone, okay? So you might come up with a different set of C's, but just to have something to hang our thoughts on, these are the six we'll look at here this morning quickly. Compromise, the art of compromise. She said compromise comes first because it is basic for making any long-term relation work. Now, too often we think compromise is bad, compromise is wrong. I want to make sure we understand we're not compromising on principle. We're not compromising on, well, sometimes divorce is okay and sometimes it's not. That's not the issue here. Compromise simply implies a willingness not to be stubborn. And I've already often referred to it as the delicate dance of compromise. We could say it in another word, or other words, we could say it's the art of getting along. And as was expressed, and I forget who said it here, but if one partner always gets his own way, it's not healthy. And I have the same notes in here, the same thought. It works best if both partners see the wisdom of compromise. It's never healthy if one partner always gets his own way and the other always gives in. That is not what God designed. Part of that I said the other night about it's thinking, not thinking alike. That the goal is not to think alike. The goal is to think together. You have two ideas, and they might be clashing, but as we talk about them, we arrive at a mutual conclusion. No one should always get their own way. Learning the art of compromise is worthwhile in a relationship, but it is essential in a good marriage. And so, we all have things that come up. Life happens. And we need to discuss things. It might be the replacement of a vehicle. It might be the purchase of something. It might be when do we put the garden to rest until, you understand. Okay, so two people, when does it suit to be together doing this project? Well, I've got this and this and this on my agenda. She has this, this, and that. But we keep talking and I'll not do this. And she says, I'll not do this. And we'll together, Thursday evening, we'll be in the garden, dig out whatever needs to be dug, and till it up. See, I call that compromise. You might call it something else. But it's I give in, she gives in. And mature thinking is there's times I need to bend her way. There's times she needs to bend my way. But when I'm always bending her way, guess what? I get out of shape. And you do too, because that ain't the way life is supposed to work. Now, look at your hands. Hold them up in front of you, literally. Are they alike? Is that by design? Each hand has four fingers and one thumb. Now, I'm not going to say you're the right hand and she's the left hand. Most of us are right-handed. So this hand, most times, is the one I go to write or to type. I'll use both, maybe. Or throw a ball. It's the favored one. But when I tie my shoes, can you do it with one hand? You see, the mirror image of the right comes together to perform the function. I know that's a crude illustration, and my wife's not the left hand necessarily. That's not what I'm getting at, but we're similar, but we're still different. We're both human beings. You're both human beings. But the art of compromise means sometimes this hand leads out, sometimes this hand leads out. That's the point I want to make. The next thing then is communication, the amazing gift of speech. Did you know? You do. The human being is the only species gifted with the ability to articulate words. Animals snort and grunt and howl and bark and crow and bugle and moo and baa and growl and screech and make all kinds of sounds. Wife, if you ask your husband a question and he always grunts, he's not a pig. But pigs do grunt, don't they? God has given us this amazing ability to speak. See, right now, there's air coming up past the vocal box, the larynx, and it comes out of the mouth. You can't even see the words, can you? But they're flying out there, and you hear them. Your ear picks up the sound waves, and it processes, and you up here, you understand what I'm saying. Stop and think how amazing that is. The human being, the human race, is the only race that has been gifted that. Premier Price from Belize, back in the 60s, when the Mennonites first started working there, he made this comment. He said, good communication makes for long friendships. When AMA first came into Amish Mennonite Aid, first came into Belize after Hurricane Hattie, we were not allowed to proselytize. We could come into the country, and we could give humanitarian aid, but don't you try to make Christians out of the Belizeans. Okay. And so we went in and we did humanitarian work. But it wasn't long till the people asked, why are you doing this? Why do you show such love? And eventually the gospel was shared and the allowance was made to have services and to have churches and Christians there. Hearing words and understanding their meaning is one thing. Understanding the intention behind the words is something altogether different, as I illustrated earlier. And I've learned this. I think as we get older, most of us, I'm losing a little bit of my hearing. I don't always hear as good as I should. And I see some of you have these fancy things behind your ears that make you hear just like when you were a teenager, I guess. Arlen, you're shaking your head. Isn't that how it works? But I repeat often back to Sue Ann, so this is what you said. Help me understand. I want to be on the same page. Have y'all done some of that too? And I found that clears up communication, because sometimes one word can make a difference if I didn't hear it right. Another thing in communication is don't interrupt when your spouse is speaking. Now, I'll have to expose ourselves a little bit. We have four sons, and then about 5 years later, we had a daughter. And she, at one time, she was talking to me there at work. She worked for us there in the honey business. And I was doing something else while I was listening to her. She said, Dad, I want you to look at me when I'm talking to you. Good advice. I mean, she was on to something. We like to multitask, right? I mean, women can do that a lot better than we can. I remember the day when my wife was on the telephone. She was stirring something on the stove, and a drawer was open, and she takes her foot. That's three things at one time. I'm kidding you not. And later that day, I got a phone call, one phone call, and I cautiously went to the nearest chair and sat down. You ladies are, you are just amazing at multitasking. So when I and Sue Ann talk, I like to look into her eyes, lay the paper down, etc., and give her my full attention. Is that a good idea? Men, what do you think? Ladies, what do you think? Communication. Don't try to read each other's minds. Talk to your spouse with as much respect as you would your best friend. He or she probably is. And the way something is said, the voice inflection conveys far more than the actual words. Honey, would you be able to get me a toothpick? I've got something stuck in my teeth. Honey, give me the toothpick. You can say the same thing, but the way it's said conveys what? An intention in here. And it either sounds like a request or a demand. And I don't think we have any right to demand from our spouses. It's a request. She's a gift. Anyhow, that's what I have found. And you all probably know this. I'm just probably reiterating things you already know. But Peter says that I stir up your pure mind by way of remembrance. I need to hear this as much as you. The third point is care. The third C in communication, the set of the heart. Never, and we heard that before here already, never put your spouse down in front of others. A heart that is caring is a heart that loves. When you truly care about someone, you don't want to hurt them. You just don't. If you want to hurt them, you're not caring for them. And a caring heart attitude, the set of the heart simply means how are the sails set on a sailboat? It's to catch the wind in order to drive the sailboat forward. That's the set of the sail. The set of the heart should be, by default, a sanctified default. It's, I want to care for you. And it'll actively seek to do good things for someone else. And I've already said this, I can be rejected by the world if I'm loved by one. If I know that she cares for me, and as life has it, being in the ministry for 30 years, you know, there's things that come up, there's accusations, there's things leveled at you that aren't true, that you wonder, where did that come from, that just hurt my heart to shreds. And I'd go home, and there was someone there that cared. That makes all the difference. Care motivates gentle behavior. Men, we need to never forget this. Be gentle with that fragile being by your side. You have no right to run roughshod over her. You have no right to speak angrily at her. Would you agree, brothers? I have no right to do that. Although I feel like it sometimes. Listen, how does our Heavenly Father speak to you? Gently, with mercy, with kindness. And we are to be a reflection of him. The way he treats us is the way we ought to treat her. That's where I draw a model and an example from. The servant heart says, I care for you. I remember so vividly this caring thing. I was sitting at the dinner table, supper table probably, and I wanted salt for tomato. And the thought went through my mind to ask one of the children or my wife to get the salt for me, please. See how I said that? Get the salt for me, please. You use please, but you made a demand, but you kind of softened it with please. And you know, just, it wasn't the Lord speaking, but it was just almost like it. The thought flashed through my mind, Philip, who do you think you are that you can ask someone else to do something that you are perfectly capable of doing yourself? And so I get up from the table, and I go get the salt. Then the Spirit pushed me a little further. He said, well, while you're up and at it, ask if anybody else needs anything. I vividly remember that. You know, the Lord has that sledgehammer. Sometimes he just has to try to knock on my brain to get the point in. But I've never forgotten that. I need to adopt that servant heart. A caring heart is a servant heart. What can I do for you? I wonder what our homes would be like if spouses would treat each other that way. I wonder what our churches would be like if we treated each other that way. Brother, what can I do for you? In instead of what can you do for me? John F. Kennedy, years ago, many of you weren't born, 1963, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. That's a powerful example there. Commitment for a lifetime, till death do us part. That's the fourth C in communication. As we've heard already, a lifetime commitment is best for the stability and security for a family. The marriage, the family unit, is the most basic social unit in society. And that's why Satan is trying to break that thing apart here in our country and around the world. Commitment in marriage is not about being with someone. It's about being for someone. I see as I get older, and my heart goes out to my wife. I want to do what I can, as best I can, to make her life as easy as possible. The deep waters of genuine, satisfying love comes from the well of total commitment to each other, and many are unwilling to pay the price. Years ago, I worked for Walnut Creek Foods. I made deliveries. I just loved that. Met a lot of people. And out in Youngstown, Ohio, one day at an IGA store, I was making the delivery to the deli department there. Michelle was the deli manager. And she said, Phil, she said, from where I stand here, I can see your front door. And I see all the people coming in. And you know what I think? So what? So many men, so little time. I said, Michelle, what's the definition of a real man? I said, a real man, is he one that jumps from one bed to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next? Or is the definition of a real man one man who can keep one woman happy for life? I wasn't criticizing her, but I was helping her to try to see my point of view. It was just like in the face of someone so blatant. Now, this is 30 years ago. So many men, so little time. But that's the world culture, and it hasn't gotten better. The thing is, most women want a deeply satisfying emotional experience, but they're not willing to pay the price. The waters that Sue Ann and I are drinking right now, and those of you who have been married for some time, those waters are deep, they're pure, they're cool, but it's based on being together and the experiences that we've shared together. Anyhow, here's another saying: without commitment, you cannot have depth in anything, whether it's a relationship, a business, or a hobby, by Neil Strauss. Number five, court. Court your spouse. Someone mentioned it here, I don't know who it was, but the best thing we can do for our families is to love their mother. Who said that? One of you brethren that are here. Was that you, Lyle? Okay, yeah, that is awesome. That is true. I think Abraham Lincoln was the originator of that statement, if I'm not mistaken. If you want a long, happy marriage, court. Oh, what's that? Well, continue dating. You understand that one, don't you? Why do we quit doing the things after we were married that we did to get us to marriage, huh? Well, life happens, Phil. We get busy. I'm tired, and we don't have money for this and that. Yeah, we understand. I've been there. But I also caution our young couples. Why do we have to go so deep in debt that every waking moment is spent trying to pay this thing off? Could there be a better way? Just a thought. Take time to enjoy something fun together. Isaac was sporting with Rebecca, and the king looked out his window, and he saw two people doing something. And there was no question in his mind what they were doing. I don't know. I think they were cuddling. I think they were kissing. It was obvious to him that the Bible says they were sporting. Folks, you have my permission to do more sporting. It's part of that emotional back and forth. Sue Ann is the one I want to spend time with more than anyone else in the world. We do things together. We talk together. We sit on Brett, I love what you had to share. Take time. The only thing you'll take with you to eternity is the souls of your wife and your children. Your money, your kingdom, your truck, all that stuff stays here. Lavish attention on your spouse. The wheel of life spins but once. couple of verses there about the wife of your youth. We bring joy to the heart of God when we enjoy what he has given us. I think God in heaven, when there's two couples that are sporting down here, I think God looks down and he smiles. That's what I designed them for. I really do. I want to have sanctified imagination. But God never intended marriage to be a battleground of the sexes. He didn't. Be intentional about planning time together. Plan regular date nights. I don't know what you do in the summertime especially, and I'm not even sure when it started. Friday nights, it's not a big thing. We'll go to the Dairy Queen just up the road in Berlin there, 5 miles away. And I know exactly what Sue Ann wants, and I know what I want, and we get a little dessert, and we park out in the parking lot and talk and eat our dessert and go back home. It isn't much, but it means everything to us. Time together, intentional, spend. It's usually less than $10. Is your wife worth $10, man? Yeah, she is. That's what I mean about being tempted. But you have other things. Maybe you enjoy hiking or whatever. Court your spouse. Continue doing the things to her and him that you did before you were married as best you can. I know children. I've been there, but still, it needs to be intentional. Time together for each other. And the sixth is a, quote, can-do attitude. Years ago, Jim Collins wrote a book, From Good to Great. And it's a business book that we studied when I was in business with another company there. And it was simply a chronicling the journey of companies that were good companies and the effort it took to move them from a good company to a great company. And I've often used this illustration in marriage. You might have an average marriage? Who wants average? I don't. I want a great marriage, but the effort to take a marriage from good to great doesn't come without a price, doesn't come without intention. Successful and long-lasting marriages are that way because two people have attitudes that say, we can do this with God's help. Earl Nightingale has a series. I listen to a lot of podcasts and things, and this is one. He says, these six words will change your life. We become what we think about. Bible says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. What does that mean? That means the thoughts that Freeman was talking about, if you always think poor little old me, or you think critical thoughts, the seeds you plant will come back to haunt you, or the seeds you plant will come back to bless you. We become what we think about. And I am for positive thinking, but I don't buy that whole gospel lock, stock, and barrel. But just quickly, I thought about it as Freeman was speaking here. Loving yourself, self-love. Now, Jesus said you're to love your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then he says, and thy neighbor as thyself. Have you ever heard your preacher speaking about that verse? Love your neighbor as yourself. How can I love Sue Ann if I reject Philip? I think there's where a lot of conflict comes. There's a little boy inside that still isn't at rest. And if I love myself because, in this sense, God made me. He has given me the talents and the gift, all of us, what we have. That's me. I love that God chose me to bless me. God chose you to bless me. I don't brag about that. I don't lift, oh, look at me and what I can do. No, 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 no. But I am what I am by the grace of God. I love myself because God loved me. Understand? It's a fine line, I know. But when I accept myself for who I am, it opens the door for me to accept her for who she is. And I think a lot of marriages are in conflict because the man inside is not at peace with himself. Now, that was a big bunny trail. Okay, but that's what I'm thinking of here. A person with a poor attitude attracts poor results. Whether you think you can or you can't, this is Henry Ford. Whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. And so the attitude I have toward my spouse will determine the way I relate to her. And Paul said, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.